podcast for Sustainable Living Presents, Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast about the environment and the issues our planet faces. Today, we will be talking to Martin Broderick as part of our mini-series on green jobs. Today's episode is hosted by Kirsty Shakespeare. Martin is a principal sustainability consultant at Ramboll. Founded in Denmark in 1945, Ramboll is a consultancy that operates across 35 countries and combines deep local insight and experience with a global knowledge base to create sustainable societies and drive positive change for their clients. He's been at the organisation for 7.5 years, and in this time has progressed from a graduate in environmental planning through to a principal sustainability consultant who supports clients with strategic sustainability projects. Martin is now part of Ramboll's Galago team, who utilise remote sensing and machine learning and artificial intelligence to provide clients with insights for their land assets at a landscape scale, supporting them to deliver more sustainable outcomes. Sustainability and making a positive change is at the heart of everything that Martin tries to do, both personally and professionally. Hi, Martin. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Kirsty. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're very welcome. Thank you. So I wonder if you could start by telling us a bit about your background and work and how it relates to sustainability.
So I guess from an early age, I've always had an interest in science and nature and the environment. I think that's been a constant thread through everything that I've done from education onwards. So biology was always an interest that I had through school and college and even in university. So I studied marine biology in my undergraduate, and purely that was probably as a result of where my interests lie, you know, in terms of all the kinds of different interactions and things like that you would encounter in those kind of settings. So a lot of people maybe go to university with a particular career in mind, and that wasn't me, actually. So it was more where my interests lie, and then in the hope that a job might come at the end of it, which is probably somewhat naive on my part. And looking back, I maybe would have better informed myself were I to go through that process again. And hopefully, as part of this podcast, I can share some of those experiences so that you avoid some of the years that it took me to realise actually what I wanted to do. But the experience that I got at university involved a lot of lab work and led to me working in a number of different labs, which was good. It was interesting, but often it was quite routine and monotonous. And there was still that passion for the environment and sustainability that kind of bubbled underneath. And so one day I think I got into work early and I found this master's in Southampton to do environmental monitoring and assessment. And it was very much tailored to actually practical applications of in the environment and sustainability as a means to hopefully getting a career. So that was the very much the starting point of my entry into sustainability. And I'd had conversations with lecturers there as to, you know, the success in which people have moved from academia into professional jobs in the sector. So it was very much a desire to move and work into an area that I was passionate about. So that was my kind of convoluted way to getting to where I wanted to be, really. And my degree, my master's degree, actually, there was some kind of close connections between various different organizations on the South Coast. And one of those was Ramboll, which is a Danish multidisciplinary consultancy, which has quite a significant environmental department or a sector. And so those connections led to me getting a graduate position there, and I've kind of have not looked back from there, really. So I can go into a bit more detail in terms of what I do there. I started as a graduate and I started in environmental planning. So that's things like environmental impact assessments, where we, you know, you look at developments and you look at the potential impact that they may have and try and encourage the developers to think about things differently in a way that you can potentially try and minimize your impact. But as my exposure to different people in the company kind of unfolded, there was a lot of sustainability work going on it as well. And I think that was the real interest that I had in that area. And I think sustainability projects became more and more the kind of focus that I had in the work that I did. And that was principally strategic sustainability, so helping clients, public sector organisations and private sector organisations to develop sustainability strategies and action plans and performance metrics. So all these kind of things that we try and encourage them to do to improve their sustainability performance. So sustainability, I think, in general, actually is pretty much at an all-time high in terms of awareness of it and the importance of it. And, you know, that's could be from a reputational perspective from organizations, but equally could be from an understanding as to what it means and what you can contribute as a result of that. So that's kind of my raison d'etre, to be honest, you know, in terms of encouraging people to make the right decisions and to do it for the right reasons and helping to inform them to better understand why we're suggesting that they do something. So that's been a large part of my work at Ramble. I've been at Ramble for 7.5 years. More recently, I've got into a different role, which utilizes the experience that I've got previously and the knowledge in terms of sustainability and in terms of helping our clients and actually looking at innovative ways in which we can enhance their understanding and provide more insights into what they do. So I now work for a team within Ramble called Galago who utilize remote sensing imagery and machine learning and AI to basically try and provide insights that organizations couldn't really get otherwise. So, you know, we're talking about, in particular, biodiversity in the natural environment, but looking at things in a way that actually you couldn't look at them conventionally. So when we talk about organizations and big infrastructure organizations, for example, the likes of National Highways, Network Rail, Scottish and Southern Energy, all these kind of big organizations have big footprints of land. And effectively, the only way that you can ensure that you monitor them in a regular manner, you know, it is going to be through using innovative techniques like remote sensing. So Galago's focus is really on trying to support sustainable land management at a landscape scale. So really what we're talking about is managing things at a scale that would be difficult otherwise through conventional means. So having a land estate of a soft estate of 30,000 hectares, it's going to be virtually impossible to send ecologists out to monitor that periodically, to understand, you know, what's there, how is it evolving, what are the opportunities for enhancement and restoration, and how successful are the interventions that you've had in those areas. So that all links to sustainability in various different ways, you know, in terms of biodiversity primarily, but also in terms of the contribution that those services can offer, you know, ecosystem services in terms of flood resilience, climate regulation, water regulation, all those kind of things that I'm sure the listeners are familiar with. But that, in a nutshell, I suppose, has been my journey from you know, an interest in the environment at school through to where I am now. And it has been a fairly convoluted journey to get there. But I think that it certainly took me a long time to figure out what it was I wanted to do and what that looked like. And I think, you know, it's fair to say that as a student at school, sustainability, I don't think I even heard the word. Whereas I think children now, or young adults, young people now, are much more switched on, I think, in terms of what sustainability is and what it means and probably how they can contribute to that. And it's only been, you know, through this whole process that I've kind of got to where I am. And it's an ongoing journey, shall we say, and I'm still learning every day. So
every day is a school day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That actually leads me nicely on to my next question, I suppose. So if you could give advice to your younger self to help you to get, I suppose, more quickly or in a less convoluted fashion to where you are today, what would you say to your sort of 16, 18 year old self, do you think?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think inform yourself. Think about what you're passionate about. Think about what you enjoy, because I was unaware of the kind of potential, you know, opportunities in terms of work that you could explore at that age. And I think the internet did exist when I was at school, you know, it wasn't like, you know, we weren't in the Stone Age, but there's a lot more resources out there now. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to look and see what kind of, you know, what kind of organizations are out there, what kind of jobs you know, those organizations offer, and to do it in that way, where you can think, well, okay, I really enjoy working with animals, for example, or I really enjoy being outside, and I really enjoy, you know, the opportunity to interact with nature. What could I do in that space that I could, you know, pursue as a career? And it might not be university, it might be, you know, through other kind of more practical means that you could explore that. But I think speak to people and look for opportunities to just try and understand, whether it's friends of the family or whether it's people at school or college or whatever. I would say the most useful things that have happened to me in the, you know, in this journey have been through meeting people and trying to just find out more about what people do. Because I think you learn from experience, and you learn that actually it's as valuable an experience to figure out what you don't want to do versus what you do want to do. So it takes some time. So I would just encourage you to, you know, to try volunteering, to try opportunities to get involved, to reach out to different companies or different organizations that you've had an interest in. And, you know, I'd say 9 times out of 10, people are happy to help you and to encourage you, or to at least point you in the right direction. And I certainly try and adopt that approach if I'm ever contacted by anyone.
Great, thank you. And what sort of skills do you think would be useful for a young person that's looking to get into a career in sustainability consulting?
It's a really good question, because I think they're not specific skills, I would say. It's useful to be good with computers, you know, to have some ability to use Word and Excel and all those kind of boring things. But actually, what I think is really the most valuable thing is to be inquisitive and to ask questions and to challenge things and to really look at things objectively. And that's, you know, sustainability from my perspective is all about actually trying to look at a situation, look at what's being done at the moment, and try and work out whether it can be done in a better way or in a more sustainable way. And I think that's really what I would encourage everyone to think about, is to just find ways in which you can basically pick holes in things. I think, you know, I probably could be quite annoying to a lot of people, because I think I'm always, you know, you're always striving to improve, and you're always, it's all about continuous improvement and always about trying to do better. And that can be probably quite annoying for some people, but actually the passion that you have it when working in sustainability is trying to make that difference, and is trying to contribute to positive outcomes. And I think the only way you can do that is, okay, this is what you're doing here. Have you thought about doing it this way? And sometimes they haven't. And therefore, you know, that's about trying to encourage them and educate them as to what else they could be doing. It's that inquisitive nature, those skills, and that desire to just inform yourself as to what's going on. And I think that there's a real value in trying to keep on top of what's happening, being aware of what the latest thinking is in various different areas and where your passions lie. And the more you become passionate about it, the more you research it, the more informed you become. And it's just kind of a constant loop as to inform you and to kind of help you to improve your development and progress. More specific skills, I don't know if you're looking for that, but you know, it's always useful for things like GIS in terms of the environment. In terms of sustainability, it's always good to familiarize yourself with, you know, the latest accreditations, things like science-based targets for carbon and task forces for nature and all these kind of different things. It's not a requirement, and it equally, you know, depending, sustainability is so broad, you know, you could be doing things around modern slavery, or you could be doing things around carbon accounting. So it's such a broad spectrum, but I think it's just having that inquisitive nature and that desire to really to question things and to want to understand why, I think has been the key thing that I would suggest.
Yeah, and you mentioned that sustainability is an ever evolving and ever developing field. So I think even as sustainability professionals, it's important that we keep learning, because there's always new developments, there's new targets, there's new technology that's evolving. So sustainability is not a stationary, you know, once you reach this level of achievement or knowledge, you know it all. It's all continually evolving. So it's important as professionals to continue that research. Massively. And development as well.
Hugely, yeah. I think, you know, by the week, it's one of those things that is constantly evolving. You know, the more information we learn, the more we understand, the more we can actually figure out that no, that's not the way we should be doing it. Some of the kind of examples you could have is the government were promoting the use of diesel cars 10, 15 years ago, or maybe more, because they produced less carbon emissions, but they didn't really realize the fact that actually there was a lot of nitrogen oxide that was being emitted by diesels, which is far worse from an air quality perspective. So sometimes it's trial and error in terms of sustainability, but the key thing is we have to learn and we have to build on what we know and move forward and try and continue that development, because ultimately there's always going to be something to think about.
Definitely, thank you. And what sort of role do you think companies like Ramble and their graduate programs can do in supporting young people that are interested in these kind of careers? You mentioned yourself that you are often have young people reaching out to you as perhaps a mentor figure or for advice.
Yeah, so I think Ramble are quite progressive in terms of how they do things. They're a foundation-owned company, so that they're not owned by shareholders, so that they can look at things in a slightly more long-term view. And so I think, you know, in terms of development and growth and taking people through that journey, it is something that they are really keen on doing. So for example, we do paid internships for young people. Primarily that's people going through university, but that's not exclusively to that. There are opportunities for maybe younger people as well, but certainly internships is something that we push, and equally the graduate program is something that Ramble has that has really gone from strength to strength in the last few years. It's an opportunity to, you know, get a group of people in the company that can interact with each other, you know, so they talk about building networks amongst those young people so that they can learn from each other. You know, it's a big organization and there's lots of different departments in terms of engineering and environment and sustainability. And so it's understanding that the contribution that networks like that can make. But I think ultimately in terms of how it can support young people, it's about kind of showing them what it looks like on a day-to-day basis, what a role in sustainability looks like on a daily basis. And so really, you know, the kinds of skills that you need in those spaces and the kinds of interactions that you have and what's important and what you could expect from that career. Not everyone, you know, consultancy is not necessary for everyone. So as I say, it's really about getting the opportunity to get that experience and to understand whether that's something that would interest you. And what we do with our interns and graduates is try and give them exposure to a lot of different areas wherever possible. So I was fortunate enough when I started, and it's the same now, whereby you get the opportunity to work on a wide range of projects from, you know, contaminated land to air quality to water and flooding, impact assessment, ecology, you know, all the different things so you can start to firstly improve your understanding and your knowledge of sustainability and the environment, but equally to start to explore where your passion lies within the organization as well. I think the way that organizations grow is often it's an organic process whereby, you know, you start at that intern stage, you maybe progress to a graduate stage, and then you evolve. And that's certainly what I've done as part of the organization. So it's really about encouraging that opportunity to learn more, whether it's a 2 week placement or whether it's a 6 month placement or whether you're starting as a graduate, it's really about providing you with the opportunities to develop.
That sounds great. And I think it's really important that you mentioned the sort of breadth of sustainability experience as well, because I think very often most people have a couple of key jobs in mind or key areas when they think about sustainability. And it's such a broad and holistic subject that I think there's lots of areas that perhaps are overlooked or not on people's radar. So having access to those so that people can hone those interests and passions is really important.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, that's one of the benefits of being in a large organization is you have the opportunity to get exposure to all those different areas. But so I would certainly agree that sustainability is huge, you know, in terms of what that entails, and from a, you know, from a social perspective as much as an environmental perspective. And I think probably when a lot of people talk about sustainability that aren't involved in the sector or in the industry may be thinking about climate change as the primary thing, and then probably biodiversity to some extent. And then once you get beyond those two topics that are often in the headlines, it starts to get a little bit fuzzy. And I think it's only through, as you say, the exposure and the opportunity to try and understand, you know, what actually a career in sustainability could look like, that actually you realize that the potential, you know, the myriad of different things that you could be doing. So I fully encourage everyone to just dabble, you know, try out and see what you enjoy. And you know, I never imagined when I first started that I'd be involved in data science and machine learning and artificial intelligence. It's been a very organic process whereby I've spoken to people, I've taken opportunities. It's led to this opportunity, and I'm really excited by that. And I think ideally that's what hopefully will drive people's careers, is what excites you and what you're passionate about, and everything else should follow on from there.
Yeah, definitely feels a lot less like work if you enjoy it and you're passionate about it, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%.
So I wonder if you could tell us, Martin, about some of the challenges that you think your industry are going to be facing in the future, and perhaps what opportunities are available as well.
Yeah, and this is pretty much my job at the moment, really, is looking at the challenges that the kind of organisations that we work with will face, and trying to, you know, flip that on its head and consider them as opportunities, really. So I've kind of touched upon it already, but sustainability is growing in terms of the recognition of it and the awareness of it, but equally in terms of the requirements around it, whether that's from a kind of regulatory perspective or whether it's from a kind of corporate perspective, or equally whether it's a reputational thing. But ultimately, things will become more onerous for organizations. Things will become more challenging. There's public awareness, you know, in terms of the kinds of expectations that we would place on organizations to be more sustainable is growing. And I think that can only be a good thing, but equally that presents challenges for those organizations in that they need to think about how they do things and think about how they could do things differently. So as I say, what we're looking at the moment is looking at some of the challenges in terms of how you manage land and manage it in a better way, in a more effective way, more sustainable way, so that you can potentially still do what you were doing before, but actually are there parcels of land that you weren't using, you know, that are just redundant, that we could be using or to connect habitats, you know, to look for opportunities to have a more resilient natural environment. And so I think some of the challenges that organizations face is around the ability to demonstrate what you're doing, to evidence good sustainability performance. And in some areas, it's kind of maturing, I would say. You know, carbon accounting is still, you know, is still progressing and still developing. But you could say, you know, for a lot of organizations, you can fairly effectively capture your carbon footprint and outline what that is and start to develop targets. In the natural environment, in terms of sustainability, it's more difficult. And I think that will be one of the challenges that a lot of organizations face going forward, is how do you demonstrate good performance in the natural environment? People may be aware of COP15 that happened just before Christmas around these various targets and commitments about biodiversity and 30% of land across the world protected by 2030. What does that mean? You know, what are these targets and how can you effectively demonstrate that you've met them? I think that's going to be the big challenge for a lot of organizations, but equally is the big opportunity for us is to try and provide those insights in terms of tracking and monitoring and helping to identify habitats and identify different land uses in order to start to say, okay, well, this is what you've got here. Let's start to think about this at a strategic level, at a landscape scale, so that we can start to look at sustainability in a much more holistic way, because ultimately that's what we're trying to achieve, is thinking about a holistic approach for sustainability rather than saying, okay, we've got this bird species on this area of land, let's do everything we can to make sure that bird species is happy. You know, we've seen concepts like rewilding gain a lot of traction in the last few years, because actually it's almost like that, you know, Wayne's World, if you build it they will come. Provide the right habitat, provide the right opportunities, and nature follows. And I think that's what we're trying to demonstrate and monitor in the work that I'm doing, certainly, so that we can demonstrate, provide tangible measures that can demonstrate that actually we are achieving something. I think another example, sorry, I'm rambling a bit, but another example that we could have is, how many organizations are you aware of that have various commitments around planting trees? And which is great, it's fantastic. But actually, firstly, are those trees being planted in the right place? Are they at the expense of agricultural land that's needed for food, or are they being planted on grassland, which is good for pollinators, for example? And if they are in the right place, that's perfect. But how likely is it? How successful have they been in terms of actually reaching maturity? And so, you know, you may have a million trees that have been planted in the right place, but only 500,000 of them have actually reach maturity. So there's always going to be a bit of natural loss, but actually we need to try and make sure that there's accountability there. And that's going to be the one of the biggest challenges and the biggest opportunities is trying to ensure that accountability and hold people to account. And greenwash is always going to be a challenge when, you know, now sustainability is becoming more prevalent and there's greater expectation. And that's our role as sustainability professionals, is to call out those people and to say, actually, is that right? You know, is what you're doing correct, or is there a little bit of creativity there? And so I think that accountability, that monitoring, that evidence base is the challenge and the opportunity, I think, for the next, well, 10, 15, 20 years, however long. And as we've said before, you know, the more you learn, the more you understand, the more you can build on that and develop better outcomes and better solutions.
Yeah, and I think it's great that you mentioned that. You mentioned greenwashing, and I think from a member of the public perspective, that you see companies making these great claims, these great statements, and if you're trying your best as an individual to be more sustainable, and you haven't perhaps got the expertise, you know, you're relying on these companies' words. So it's good to know that there are people that are holding organisations accountable and looking into these things, so that you know, as a member of the public, that claims that are being made are genuine or not, yeah, if that's the case.
Yeah, it's so important. I think it is very easy to feel despondent, I think, sometimes, you know, and to feel a little bit helpless. Because some of these, you know, challenges around sustainability and climate change and biodiversity are so huge, you know, the scale is almost incomprehensible, that actually it's really hard to boil down to what as an individual you can do. And that was another reason to get into the sustainability field, was to try and make a contribution, however small that might be. But, you know, maybe a contribution, you've helped on a project, or you've change someone's perspective on something, you've taken people on a journey. And I think that there are still things that the general public can do, and I would always encourage that. But I think holding organizations, holding governments to account is actually what you can still do as a member of the public. And actually, you know, we've seen that can have a difference and can have an impact. So yeah, I think the large majority of sustainability professionals are working with sustainability because they have a passion for it, because they have a desire to make a positive contribution. So I would hope that, yeah, we are trying to make the world a better place, without sounding too cheesy.
And would you say, in the sort of time you've been working in sustainability, you've noticed an attitude change in the companies and organizations that you're working with to become more sustainable? Is it more of a willing step that they're looking and proactively taking, or is it they're sort of dragging their feet because they have to, because of regulation or policy?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think it really depends, I suppose, on the kinds of organizations that you're working with. Some people will be really engaged with sustainability and really be keen on trying to make a difference and trying to contribute, whereas others might not be that well informed and might not know what they could be doing. So I think you know, if you want to have the biggest impact, regulation and policy is ultimately going to be the biggest driver to ensure that the most number of organizations get on board with that. And that's always what I would advocate, is trying to have the right regulations in place to get the right outcomes. But I think where sometimes governments can't get that through, there are a lot of corporate organizations that are taking on responsibility. And some of that is, you know, going back to the previous point, it is pressure from the public, you know, in terms of where you put your pensions or where you invest your money. Those kind of things will encourage people to start thinking about sustainability. But I would actually suggest that it is dependent a lot on senior leadership, the senior leaders of organizations, and the desire to make a difference in the organization, you know, to drive that performance. Our UK head for Ramble is someone who's come from an environmental background and has really pushed sustainability since she's taken over. And that's something that I've really welcomed. But I think that's ultimately, you need that senior leadership within each organisation to be keen to want to do it, because ultimately, at this stage, it's still a kind of corporate desire to progress as opposed to improve your performance, as opposed to kind of regulatory drivers. And there are some things coming in, but I would say they often take time, and they often require a little bit of a transition. And there are other factors at play as well. You know, when we start to talk about local government and local authorities and the kind of charitable sector, well, I'm definitely aware that there's a big desire to have a positive sustainability outcome and positive contribution. But ultimately, money is going to be the deciding factor for a lot of these companies and a lot of these local authorities, because they are juggling budgets and they are having to deal with cuts. And it is frustrating, I think, for a lot of people who work in those areas, because they have the passion and the desire to make a difference. But often it's quite difficult to make that contribution or to make the contribution that you would like. Not to say that they're not doing amazing work, because a lot of people are, but the level of impact that they could be having is maybe less, because they are constrained by budgets and by various different other things in terms of resources. So it's a very mixed picture. And I think, you know, you will, as people, as young people, young adults look at and become, make themselves more aware of organizations and public sector bodies and various different things like that, they will start to recognize the people making commitments and the people backing up those commitments, and start to recognize the kind of the early adopters. That's what we, you know, a lot of what we're doing at the moment is quite new and quite innovative in terms of what we're trying to do in the team that I'm part of. And what we're really looking for is those early adopters to say, yeah, we want to give that a go. We want to try this. We want to improve our performance, and we want to get the most out of what we do. And often you'll have the people that will look to those early adopters and see how successful they've been as to how they could do it. And so you always have that lag, really, in terms of people who go and get it done and the people who are a bit more cautious, a bit more conservative. And that will often depend on the sector involved and the ambition and the drivers which are ultimately behind each organisation.
Yeah, and I think it's great to see a lot of that innovation and entrepreneurship is coming from young people, and that's being driven by, you know, young graduates that are sort of getting into the market, and they've got these real strong sustainability principles and do believe there's a way that things can be done better and more sustainably.
100%, yeah. I mean, actually, you know, you asked me about skills earlier. Coding is something that I, you know, is another language literally to me, but young people are much more familiar with things like coding now and the kinds of things that opens up, you know, the opportunities that can offer in various different ways in sustainability. But equally, I think young people are often willing to try new things. You know, that as you say, they're open to trying different things and not necessarily going with the way it's always been done. And I think that's what I'd encourage, always going back to that thing of questioning and being inquisitive, is actually, why are we doing it like this? Why, you know, well, it's because it's the way we've always done it. But actually, could we do it differently? Could we write a bit of script or a macro that does all the calculations for you in a spreadsheet rather than having to do it all manually? You know, those kind of things that actually, as a young person, you question and you look and you think, yeah, this could be done differently. And that's really the value that young people can offer, is, as you say, the passion and the desire to make that contribution and that enthusiasm that you get at that early stage of, you know, you haven't been ground down by these people who are just reluctant to get to go on this journey. So I always enjoy speaking to young adults and graduates, because it is that breath of fresh air and that optimism and that desire to make a difference and that aspiration. And I still maintain that desire and those ambitions, but I think at that age you have that enthusiasm, which I think is so infectious, and I always enjoy, you know, those kind of encounters with young people.
And I wonder if you've got any sustainability projects you can tell us about that perhaps you're particularly proud of that you've been working on.
the project actually that I'm really proud of is the first introduction that I had to the Galago team, the data science team, which is where we worked with National Highways, which is the organization that runs and operates the motorways and A roads of England. We've been working with them for a long time, but there was an opportunity to get some innovation funding to support them to better manage their environmental assets. And so this was really provided the, well, this kind of goes back to what we talked about before in terms of the opportunities within a large organization in order to, you know, to identify the skills and expertise across the organization. And that was where we got the introductions to the data science team. And we could look at National Highways. We knew the kind of challenges they had from a sustainability perspective, and we knew the potential opportunities that we could have in terms of the kind of technologies that Galago would offer. And so I'm really proud because I think, you know, that project brought together a lot of different stakeholders within their organization to understand what their challenges were, and brought together a lot of the expertise from our side so that we could get to this endpoint where we could actually provide them with some insights and some outputs that they couldn't have got otherwise. And that's the beauty of what we were trying to do, and what we're still trying to do now and are doing is bringing together that expertise to provide insights that wouldn't have been possible 5 years ago. So providing a habitat map of their whole estate from Cornwall to Durham and everywhere in between, so they can actually start to understand, oh, okay, this is what we've got here. This is a real hotspot for biodiversity, or this is, you know, this could overlap with some flood work that we're doing here. This is providing those insights and providing that baseline in which you can start to really build on your understanding. So I think that was a really exciting opportunity to look at the kind of potential that you can have in the sustainability space. And, you know, you're bringing together the expertise from ecology, from flood risk, from climate, from carbon. And the more insights you get from this kind of data, the more you can actually build on it. And I think one of the other things I would say, actually, in terms of the skills, as well as being inquisitive, I think is communication is so important. Talking and finding various ways to try and understand the skills and experience that people have across different organizations or within your own organization. But ultimately, it was that opportunity to just to listen and to talk and to learn that led to, you know, some really positive outcomes from that project that has, you know, been the stepping stone to a lot of other things as well. And I think that was, you know, from my own personal perspective, that was the project that led to me taking on this different role. And so that's why I would always encourage people when young people are offered opportunities is to say yes as much as possible, go for it. And as I say, if it's something that you don't enjoy, you've learned something in terms of what you don't want to pursue, but equally be open to trying new things, because ultimately that's what this was all about, and that's what's led to me taking this opportunity to really hopefully have a positive contribution at a significant scale.
So, and I suppose it's important to look at our successes, but I think also reflecting on our failures is also an important learning opportunity. So can you think of any sort of personal career failures or projects that you've worked on that haven't quite gone as expected, and how that's turned into a learning opportunity for you?
For all the, you know, for all the project successes, that there are a number of, you know, organizations that you speak to that for one reason or another don't end up becoming a project. And I think it's something that you have to accept, you have to learn from, and be willing, you know, reflect on why didn't progress beyond that. And I think it could be a range of different things and a range of factors that are out of your control. So that's one thing. I think in terms of personal failures, I think there's probably reports, probably reports I could have written in a more succinct way, you know. And I think it's really important to reflect on your skills and your, you know, your expertise. I'd like to think that a lot of the projects I've been involved in have been quite positive, but equally, a lot of the process involved in working on those projects involves challenges and struggles, because, you know, maybe you don't know where to start when you're writing a report, or maybe you don't know how to approach someone about a particular problem. Or I think it's being aware of your weaknesses. And actually, one thing I would say, there's been people in Ramble who've been very good at this is being supportive and recognizing, you know, where you might need help and actually being open to asking for help, because I think there's always a fear that you don't want to look like you don't know what you're doing. But actually, we all started there, you know, we all start, I've got to start somewhere. And so there's been times when I've struggled, you know, in terms of, as I say, trying to find the right information, and that has a knock-on effect in terms of time. And I think in terms of consultancy, you know, that there is that constraint in terms of when you need to get it done by and how long you should be taking to do it. So that there's that kind of added pressure there, which I enjoy, you know, the pressure of. But I think in terms of some of those challenges and failings, I think it's been those unknowns and those not knowing how to do it that I've, you know, in projects that have maybe led to things not being quite right, but have often always been rectified by speaking to the right person. And equally, I think I would say to young people, actually, it might not be your fault that it's gone the way it has. It might not be, you probably aren't to blame, because ultimately, I've said this to graduates, if you don't know what you're doing, it's probably because the person who's told you what to do hasn't explained it very well. And so I think that's something that you should always be aware of, is you not knowing what you're doing is a reflection on the person who's actually giving you the work. And I think that's what I would always be, you know, encourage people to think about when you're struggling with something, is ask the questions, try and work out why you're having problems with it. Graduates and interns and young people are there to learn and to be invested in and to develop and to be the next generation of high flying sustainability professionals. But we've all got to start somewhere. And I think those challenges that you encounter in those early stages, you only get through them by support from your colleagues and your own desires, obviously, to improve. But really, ultimately, what you need to do is to make sure you have the right people around you to support you to get to where you want to be.
Yeah, I think that self-reflection, resilience and being able to ask for help, I think are really important things to be aware of, whatever your career level. You know, you're not always going to be the most expert there is. No. In a subject.
I could quite happily say that I'm not an expert either. I'm not an expert in anything. I just kind of have a relatively good understanding of lots of things. Yeah. And then I call upon the expert when I need, you know, when I need the help. So
and that comes back to sustainability being a constantly evolving field, that there's always going to be perhaps someone that's got more knowledge, more relevant
exactly.
knowledge, more specific
exactly.
local knowledge, more global knowledge than you have. So being able to ask for that help, and you know, knowing where to find the help are quite important skills, as well as reflecting on, you know, perhaps where you need more help and where you need to be able to ask for support as well.
Definitely, so, definitely.
Thanks for highlighting those. And last couple of questions for you now. Have you got a sustainability hero? Was there someone that motivated you to get into sustainability in the environment to start out with?
It's a really good question. I think, you know, when I was kind of, I suppose, starting out on my journey in inverted commas, there wasn't anyone obvious, I think, that jumped out for me. I think it was just a desire to make a contribution. I think, you know, you could always look back to David Attenborough and the teams behind those kind of documentaries, because ultimately they drive that awareness of the natural environment and all the complexity that that offers and how important it is. And I think actually, to be fair to the teams involved in those programs, in recent years, they've been much better at highlighting the interaction between humans and, you know, the natural environment, whereas often in the past, it would be much more focused on the species in question. And you wouldn't be aware that actually there was, you know, there was a road or a town nearby, that it's not necessarily always a pristine environment. So I think everything that David Attenborough has done and the teams involved in that has been a real inspiration and someone that I look to in terms of how you go about your what you do and how you present yourself and how you operate. And I think actually more recently, as I, you know, certainly in the last few years, as I've become more aware, there's been a lot more people that actually have, you know, been inspiration for me in terms of young people. I think, you know, the likes of Greta Thunberg is amazing when you think about how young she was when she really started her journey and all the things that she's done and all the probably the negativity that she has to endure, but how actually true she stays to that. And I think the people that I value the most are the people that stand up for what they believe in and are willing to put their principles, you know, before anything else. The likes of Caroline Lucas, you know, Christina Figueres, the people that are kind of constantly challenging people and constantly trying to push the ambition in terms of trying to encourage people to think about things differently. That's really, you know, my aspiration as well, is to kind of follow in their footsteps, really, to constantly try and say, well, can we do this better? As I keep saying, you know, can we do this differently? It's a good start. You know, COP 15 was a good start. COP 26, 27 is a good start, but there's so much more to do. And I think one other organization that I will highlight, rather than a person, but an organization, that the likes of someone like Client Earth, as an organization who are using the tools at their disposal in terms of regulation and legislation to try and hold governments and organizations to account in terms of their sustainability practices or lack of in some instances. And I think those kind of people I hold in high esteem, really, because they are the ones that really inspire me to keep going. You know, you have days where you feel despondent and you feel frustrated and you feel a little bit lost as to where you fit into this process. But actually, when you see the kind of things that people are doing, you get some hope from that. And I think those are the kinds of people that I try and surround myself with in terms of building on that, because ultimately hope is what you need to try and continue and to pursue in the world that we live in.
Great. Thank you for sharing this with us. I think it's interesting though that you highlight groups as well as individuals. I think, you know, Greta's a fantastic example of the impact one individual can have when we think about, you know, I'm just one person, what can I do to combat climate change or help sustainability? You know, Greta is a fantastic example of actually what one person can do to inspire a movement and inspire others through communication skills, but also thinking about the impact that those bigger organizations can have in things like legislation and dealing with governments and dealing with big corporate businesses that perhaps as individuals it's more of a challenge to reach out to and have your voices heard.
Exactly. You can be a small cog in a big machine, but that small cog is still pretty important, you know, in terms of everything that you do. And as you say, it's amazing that you have these people that stand up as role models in their own right. But equally, as you say, it's don't underestimate the contribution that you can make as part of an organization.
Fab. And final question, have you got any final takeaway messages for our listeners about green careers or about sustainability in general that you'd want them to sort of really take away and think about?
What I would suggest is follow your passion. That is ultimately what I kind of live by. And I would say that I would encourage you to live by. You'll be happier and you'll get more out of it if you enjoy what you're doing. And don't feel despondent or frustrated if you don't get to the right place straight away. I think a lot of graduates, or, you know, people coming out of education, doesn't have to be a graduate, people come out of education expecting to be in the right place immediately. You know, it took me the best part of 8 years to actually work out where I wanted to be and to get there. So don't feel too frustrated or too despondent if you're not there immediately, because it does take time. And I know that, certainly even now, but as a young person, I was keen to just get to where I wanted to be as soon as possible. But it doesn't, unfortunately, always work like that. There are always exceptions to that rule. And there are some amazing young people who are doing amazing things. But I would say, continue with your passions, continue with your beliefs, you know, what you stand up for, and have that at the heart of what you do, because ultimately that will stand you in good stead. And I think people who stand up for what they believe in are the people that we should be looking to, you know, in terms of role models, whether it's Greta Thunberg or from one end of the age spectrum to the other to David Attenborough. You know, it's about standing up for what you believe in.
And I guess not underestimating the value and importance of the experience that we gain while we're on the journey trying to get to where we want to be. If it is taking time, there's still value in that experience, those skills that are being learned that are going to be transferable when you get to where you want to go, when you find out where that is.
Hugely, yeah, hugely. I probably must have done 6 or 7 jobs between finishing university and doing what I'm doing now. And as you say, you know, you pick up skills from them, whether they're general communication skills or interacting with people, meetings, you know, how to behave around in a kind of corporate setting. It's all those kind of things that actually, as you say, you will benefit from in that on that journey. So yeah, it's all part of the bigger picture, and it all fits into that kind of jigsaw puzzle that ultimately ends up in creating that final thing. So it's never a bad experience. It's something to learn from.
Definitely wonderful. Well, thank you ever so much, Martin, for taking the time to be with us today and telling us more about what it means to be a principal sustainability consultant, and for sharing your journey with us.
Pleasure. Yeah, thanks for having me.
This has been Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast by the Trust for Sustainable Living. Thank you to today's guest, Martin Broderick. Episode hosted by Kirsty Shakespeare. Organised by Kirsty Shakespeare and James Myers. Music by Billy Painter. Find us online by going to trustforsustainableliving.org. Join our online community at tsl.earth. Thank you for listening.